Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Chris on IMTN Worldwide Radio, and this is Around the ATL. This is the Atlanta Hawks end of season show. 646-652-4479 is the number as we get started this evening. Thanks for all of you who will be tuning in live or watch later on this week. So to kind of get the ball rolling just a little bit, let's do some housekeeping. First of all, again, I want to say, you know, my condolences to those who lost loved ones and were affected by many other shootings that have been happening in Atlanta over the last week or so. Terrible tragedies are happening right now in the city of Atlanta. So I just wanted to make sure I mention that first and foremost real quick. So let's talk about what the show is about tonight. The 2022 season was not fun. End of the year, 41-41, never had a win streak longer than 5 games, lost to bad teams often, lost 13 games after having a 10-point lead or more, lost several games despite having or being within 5 points with 3 minutes left. We didn't improve as a defensive team for the second straight year. Team was on pace to probably not even make the play-in at all, quite truthfully. There was a coaching change late in the season. The team ended up qualifying for the play-in. They won that game. They beat Miami. Ended up playing the defending Eastern Conference champions, and despite the fact that many thought the Hawks would be swept or a gentleman sweep per se, they actually had opportunities to win that series, believe it or not. Several Boston players commented how if you know that coaching change possibly had happened earlier in the season, things could have been different, right? But what's going to happen this offseason? A lot of things are going to change, obviously. What players will stay, who will go, who will be on the new coaching staff with Coach Snyder remains to be seen. There were many positives. Trae Young led the league in total assists for the second straight year. We kind of predicted that on the show. A.J. Griffin, recognized as a rising star. Big O was a force off the bench, even though he got into the top 10 in blocked shots per game. We saw the growth of Jalen Johnson as well. So we're going to talk about the goods, the bads, a little bit of the ugly, everything under the sun. So hopefully you have a good time watching the show tonight. Of course, thanks again for watching. If you have not subscribed yet, please help us out. Subscribe to the IMTN Worldwide Radio YouTube page. If you're listening, you can listen on Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, Alexa, Odyssey, all of those platforms has the show Around the ATL on them. You can follow on Facebook and Instagram for IMTN Worldwide Radio. And you can, of course, follow us on Twitter, Intellect ATL and Jordan23 ATL. Our sponsor again for tonight's show is Price Design Club. He's the creator of the original logo for Around the ATL, the current logo, as you can see, as well as the first T-shirt, as I have on right there. So if you need professional design work of any kind, please contact them. Let them know Around the ATL sent you. I know they'll definitely appreciate that. Now, that being said, we're almost about to welcome our co-host. Let me switch a couple of things around here. There's that. So let's get ready to introduce our co-host for tonight's show. He is a very long, forever Atlanta Hawks fan for sure. He is a former season ticket holder, by the way. But Atlanta sports fan overall as well. He's written a lot of articles about the Atlanta Hawks and other teams, Sports Illustrated, Fansided, things of that nature, of course, on Twitter. As I mentioned, Jordan23ATL, make sure you follow him. But he just loves sports. His name is Jordan Jackson. Let's go ahead and bring him into the show.
What's going on, sir?
What's up?
Well, you know, as always, Around the ATL, I'm usually coming to you from a different location around the ATL. Tonight, I am coming to you from the historic Lithonia, Georgia.
Okay.
And so that's where I'm currently located. Shout out to all the folks out there on Hawks Twitter, who I know will be checking us out now as well as in the podcast form. We appreciate all of our listeners. Whether you catch us live, which we prefer, so you call in and chop it up with us. But if not, you know, as you stated previously just now, you can also catch us on your favorite podcast format as well as on YouTube, you know, if you want to see, you know, some of the expressions that we make when we talk about some of the things that's happening in Atlanta sports. Shout out to the supervisor, Coach Dennis Tony. You know, he's also a big-time Hawks fan as well. In fact, I went to that last Hawks game, and, you know, when I told him I was going to go and get a standing room only ticket, he actually sent over a few in so I could pick up a few things from the gear store. You know, they had a nice little sale going on at a certain gear store. I don't know if I want to put that out there over the airways. I might take all of my gear here in the future. But they had a nice little deal, man, getting T-shirts like $8 and whatnot. So we grabbed about 7 apiece, Coach Tony and I, including this one that I have on right now. Quick note, this not Hawks related, from Coach Tony. He told me, I was talking with him yesterday, and he said that if Georgia wins the SEC again, Nick Saban will either retire at the end of this upcoming season or the season after. So I just want to put that out there on the airways, get it on the record,
right,
you know what I mean, in case Coach Tony comes through with that prediction. But, you know, we're not here to talk Bulldogs tonight. We're here to talk Hawks. So with that being said, sir, let's talk about those Hawks.
All right, so that's probably be the last time we get to play that one for the year of 2023. Now, usually I would go into the first topic, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and bring this caller into the show to see what they have to say about the Hawks season. Go ahead, caller, tell us your name
gentlemen.
And where you're calling from.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is John from Union City.
John representing the Union. What's going on, sir?
John, what's up,
oh,
sir?
Oh, man. How y'all doing? I'm glad to be with you tonight.
We missed you on the draft recap, sir. We'll have to certainly have you back on next time we talk Falcons, because I certainly need to hear your thoughts on all everything that's taking place since we last spoke, sir.
Oh, man, I am so sorry. You know, us old folks sometimes have to go to bed early in order to be able to get up early, and that's what I did. I went to bed at 7 o'clock. I'm kind of ashamed of that, because I remember when I was so young, I was trying not to go to bed at 7 o'clock, but here I am in my later years. I'm in the bed like old folk. I mean, good grief. But I definitely talk with you guys about that. But, yeah, hey, well, next time, gentlemen, next time we can talk about those Falcons. But, yeah, the Hawks, I got plenty to say on that. Whenever y'all are ready to, you know, just start chopping it up, I got my axe and got plenty of cordwood to chop up.
Oh, boy. Well, let's do this then. Before I want to get started officially, I do want to mention something. Now, for those who do get to watch the live show or watch after the fact or you're listening on your podcast, there are some shows I want you to go back and actually watch on the IMTM Worldwide Radio YouTube channel. Because there are certain shows that I did as the season progressed that directly dealt with some of the things that was happening with the team, okay? So if you go to the IMTN Worldwide Radio YouTube page, if you start at the, let's see, episode, actually it was the second around the ATL Side Notes episode that I did, and it was Why Now, Why Not Last Season, Kevin Huerter. This was about 5 months ago when I first heard that trading Kevin Huerter was the worst trade since Dominique Wilkins. So I had to do a whole show on that. And what I did, I broke down 34 games of the 2021 season to show what actually players did in those games. Kevin, Trey, and John, along with other players on that team, just to kind of show you what he actually did that season as opposed to what some people thought he did, just to show you comparisons, okay? So that was 5 months ago I did that show. I also wanted to look at the show called Hawks Basketball. That was about 4 months ago. This was actually a recap of an article that I wrote in regards to the fact that our season shouldn't be going the way it is with having Murray and Trey on the same team, okay? I also did a show right after that called Do You Want to Win or Almost Win, okay? I did a show right after that 3 months ago on around the ATL Side Notes called Is Clint Really the Difference? This was a period of time where Clint had gotten hurt, and I said, well, let's show you what he did the previous certain games here, and then is him coming back going to really make that much of a difference of how we were playing at the time? Watch that particular show. I also have a show where I talked about Hunter for the first time. This was called False Expectations. This was about a month ago. This is pretty recently, and I broke down the fact that, okay, well, here's what he's been doing over the last 10 games. And here's his comparison to other small forwards in the league. Don't we expect him to be better than those other small forwards? But guess what? I had to do another show about Hunter not too long ago. This was after, by the way, you got to make sure you watch them, episode 122 and 123, the Bob Rathman, Steve Holman interviews. But I did a show called Do You Not Want the Best of a Player? And in that particular show, I actually went through the number four draft picks in NBA history over the last 30 years. And along with some other things of note to let you know, okay, he was the National Defensive Player of the Year coming out of Virginia, winning that national championship. We drafted him as a defensive player. Why shouldn't we have an expectation that he become a stopper in the NBA, right? The last show I'm going to mention that I definitely want you to go and take a look at is called Competition and Consistency. Go watch that. Now, all of those shows combined give you a little bit of an overlay of what had been happening during the entire NBA season for the Atlanta Hawks. I really want you to go and watch those shows on the IMTN Worldwide Radio YouTube channel because it's going to really give you an essence of some of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight. So that being said, I'm going to open it up a little bit. Jordan, just in general, and actually let me do this. Here are some of the questions we want to talk about tonight. How did you feel about the season? How do you feel about the players? How do you feel about the coaching? What changes do you think will happen? Can this team win a championship? So those are going to just be bits and pieces. We're going to kind of freestyle this a little bit tonight, but I have some other specifics I want to talk about. But Jordan, you go ahead and lead it off, sir.
Well, sir, what was the first question? Because I want to directly address the topics the way you got them set up. What was the first topic that you mentioned, sir?
The easy one. How do you feel about the season?
Well, I feel ultimately the season was a finish. When you add a young all-star player But yet you lose two more games than you did the previous season. Now, you know, it was encouraging that we at least won one more game in the postseason. So that part of it was encouraging. But ultimately, you know, if I'm going to be bluntly honest, the season was a failure because, in my opinion, anytime your team fails to meet or exceed expectations, your season is a failure. And certainly, I don't think any of us expected the Atlanta Hawks to be an eighth seed at the end of the regular season, to be in the play-in again. You know, so, you know, I can't categorize it as anything but that. But with that being said, the victory over Miami, who, you know, really did a number on us in the postseason the previous year in the play-in game was certainly encouraging. And the fact that they did fight and didn't get gentlemen swept after going down 3-1, won another game. It really should have forced a game seven, you know, in the game, a game I attended at home that was really a hotly contested game. Hawks had a four-point lead about midway through the fourth quarter in that game and just let it kind of fall by the wayside down the stretch. So, yeah, but as far as just this season alone, you know, if I can sum it up in one word, that word is failure, sir.
John, same question.
Gentlemen, let me tell you something. Unbeknownst to us, after looking back and that hindsight being 2020, the Hawks' demise was done in the offseason, leading to this season. The front office, the situation with Russler McMillan as well as Schlenk, when they went and got DeJounte Murray behind Schlenk back, that really, in my opinion, looking back at everything, that really set the tone for the year because you had roiling going on in the organization all the way up until Quinn got hired. Now, let me say this. On paper, and gentlemen, I'm just going to say on paper, and everything that I say from now on up until the time that I, you know, move on to something else is going to be on paper. You traded away 15 points per game in Gallinari, the game from Herter. And, you know, that's a qualified 15 points per game, as you brought
actually,
out.
It was 12 points a game. 12 points.
12 points a game. Excuse me. I don't want to get that man no more points than what he's supposed to be getting. 12 points a game. Then I think it was 15 points a game in Lou Williams. Now, this is on paper as an average. You cut that out of your offense. You cut that out of your offense this year, okay? DeLon Wright, a couple of points, yeah, you can say here, there, whatever. Then Solomon Jones, I think that's what his name is, the toughness, the off-the-bench presence that you used to have, you didn't have that anymore. Then Bogey Bogdanovich. I thought I heard somebody say that.
Solomon Hill, sir.
Oh, Solomon Hill, I'm sorry. Man, I don't know where I got Jones from. At any rate. Okay, Bogey Bogdanovich wasn't available at the beginning of the year. Okay, John Collins had come back too soon from that finger injury just to play in the playoffs in the Miami series. And he was still suffering from that when he got here. So that trade that was made to get DeJounte Murray here and the resulting loss of scoring that you had on the team total, coupled with the internal roiling because, okay, if Travis Schlenk is supposed to be the general manager, how has he been usurped? How has he been undermined? Then after you undermine him, you ease him off into Siberia, into one of the slave labor camps, and nobody hears from him anymore. All of this made this team, yeah, and plus, Man, I mean, I could go on for another 20 minutes about all of the craziness that was going on with this team, especially all of the acrimony that Trae Young was getting. You know, talking about he's shooting too much, he's doing this, he's doing that, blaming Trae. And, okay, if you are bringing a DeJounte Murray as a helper for Trae Young or as a second point guard out there on the floor, Trae Young has to stop doing what he has been doing for 4 years prior. That is leading the team, taking the tough shots, and people are screaming for him to be more efficient than what he was the previous year. And the thing is that shooters aren't always efficient. There is no 100% shooter. There is no 75% shooter, okay? But Trae Young, you know, another thing. You know, every time I started talking, I started thinking about more stuff. Oh, who's the phrase? What is the identity of the Atlanta Hawks? Well, the identity of the Atlanta Hawks is Trae Young, okay? Trae Young is this team's identity. Well, what's the team system? The system is Trae Young. Trae Young is the system. Until you get him some help, reliable help that can help him, the integration of DeJounte Murray with a Trae Young, it wasn't a smooth transition. It couldn't be, because there were times where, okay, Trae Young would miss a game or two. Trae Young wouldn't be there. DeJounte Murray would run the team. Oh, the team looks better when DeJounte's running it. You know, you started hearing stuff like that, and I'm saying, okay, you know, I understand that. However, these are two different styles of players. It's just like having two sweet chefs in the kitchen, both of them trying to make a chocolate cake. You know, one person may do it one way, another person may do it another way, but you'll still end up with chocolate cake if they don't strangle each other in the kitchen. And that's basically, that's my lead-in for tonight. Because, see, now, when we started talking about this, you know, there are going to be other things that I'm going to think of. But that's what I saw. And the problem is, just like you alluded to, is that we were not that far away. We didn't get blown out that many times, but we hovered around the 500 mark. We just hovered there. We'll go five up, then we'll drop five down. It was just like looking at a EKG machine watching the Hawks, you know, because we were flatlining, and then that heartbeat would come up 5 points, down 5 points, then a flat line. Up 5 points, down 5 points, then a flat line. And it was just frustrating because we would see flashes of good play out of them. We would see flashes of good play out of them. And then they would just go back to habits that were detrimental to them. And and the coaching change did not change that. The coaching change didn't say that, but there were people trying to say that the coaching change, well, Quinn is going to institute his system, and this is going to happen, that's going to happen. But it still was the same thing. Still was the same thing, lukewarm, or as the young people now say, they were mid. So that's my lead-in for tonight, gentlemen.
Well, I appreciate that, John. Now, one thing I will say is that there was an implementation, but it wasn't going to be 100% one just because of the time frame that you're talking about bringing in somebody new. That was going to be impossible to say, well, you're going to bring in a completely different one. He didn't have – obviously, you saw that the whole coaching staff has been changed. So now he's about to get the people that he wanted to have to be able to coach alongside him. So that's going to be a change right there during this offseason. But there were slight things that did change, and I'll say this. The offensive efficiency of the team went from 113 to 120, went from being 16th in the league to fourth in the NBA. So there was some changes there. It just it wasn't going to be a matter of a permanency, so to speak, in that short amount of time. And Trae, a lot of his post-game interviews continued to mention that, continued to say that the things that they're learning and they're trying to curb themselves into those things or whatnot. But like I said, that was a short period of time, but you can see it. And we know it because we beat Miami and we took Boston to the point of they were scared, and you can tell, right? So there was, and the guys from Boston said, shoot, yeah, if they had had that change a little bit earlier in the season, Hawks would have been at least a fifth seed in the East. So the changes were being implemented slow and sure, and there was things that were being done that did affect the team in a positive way. It was just 20 games is not a lot of time to, again, completely change over everything that they've been learned for basically like half a decade, basically the last 4 or 5 years. So I will say that just on that end. So that does bring me to my next point to kind of start this off in regards to the next part of this is the players themselves. Now, one thing I want to do is actually kind of give everybody a little bit of an overview of what folks did this past season. So real quick, Murray came into the team, and he ended up – think about this. When was the last time we had a shooting guard average 20 points a game in a season? That's what Murray did. In the 74 games, he averaged 20.5 points, had 1.5 steals, had 6 assists, had 5 rebounds a game. Trae Young, of course, everybody pretty much knows what he did. 26 points, averaged 10 assists a game, led the league in assists for the second straight year, total assists. Hunter, 15 points a game, 4 rebounds a game, had 1 assist a game. John Collins, again, you already know what I'm about to say, but I'm going to keep it until later. But 13 points, 6.5 rebounds a game. Bogey, 14 points. Pretty good season this year. Clint, 12 and 11. Sadiq Bey had 11 a game. Big O had 9 points, 7 rebounds. And again, we know that he ended up in the top 10 in blocks with 1.3 blocks a game off the bench, which was really impressive. AJ, our rookie, 8.9 points a game. So basically 9 points a game. Shot very well from 3. We all know that. Jalen Johnson definitely had an improved year. Minutes continue to increase, but he had 5.6 points a game. I'm not going to really get into Holiday and Culver and Holiday and Trent and the rest of those guys. Because the rest of those guys didn't really play. So that's what our team did for the most part as far as minutes, games played, things of that nature. That was the bulk of the team that actually got minutes. So next question is, In regards to the players themselves, how do you feel about the players overall in regards to what they did individually, how they played with each other? You know, you can spot a couple of players if you want to, spotlight a couple of players. But Jordan, I'll let you go first.
Well, couple of things. Well, one thing, I do want to give the postseason stats here. As my tablet is switched back to the regular season. Okay, in the postseason here, Trae Young, of course, led the team in scoring, 29.2 points per game, played 38 minutes a game in the postseason, averaged 10.2 assists, 3.7 rebounds, 1.7 steals, 0.7 blocks, and 4 turnovers. Second leading scorer was DeJounte Murray, 23 points a game. Of course, one less game due to suspension for bumping a ref at the end of a game there. 23 points, 7.2 rebounds per game, 6.8 assists per game, and 38 minutes. DeAndre Hunter, 16.7 points per game, 5.7 rebounds per game, 1.2 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.3 blocks. John Collins, 11.3 points, 4.3 rebounds, and 1 block per game. Net improvements, we've got a 3-point shooting up a bit to 34.4%. Bogey Bogdanovich, I should have mentioned him before Collins, as far as I'm going in order of points, because he averaged 13.3 points per game in the postseason. Also averaged 2.5 assists, 3 rebounds, 1 steal, and 0.8 blocks per game. Clint Capella, 8.3 points per game, 8.3 rebounds per game, and 25 minutes of action, and 0.7 blocks per game. No, 0.5 blocks per game, excuse me, for Clint. Sadiq Bey, 22.2 minutes per game, 7.5 points per game. Also four rebounds and one assist. Onyeka Okongwu, 6 points per game, six rebounds per game, and 21.8 minutes. Also 1.3 blocks, which was a team high as well. And Jalen Johnson, 9.3 minutes per game, 4.3 points, 2.5 rebounds, 1.3 assists, and 0.5 steals per game. And Aaron Holiday only played 4 minutes total and scored 6 points. As far as spotlighting some of the players, well, one of the things I got to mention, go back with John's point, some of the people who were trying to act like the team is running better without DeJounte Murray when Trey was out, these are just Trey haters. These are people that still wishes that guy that plays for Dallas that's been in Cancun a lot longer than our guys have been in Cancun was on the team, because the Hawks record without Trae Young this season was 3 wins and 6 losses. Okay, that's not better. I'm sorry. That's not better. For a 500 team to have twice as many losses as wins is not an improvement with Trae out. So that's a false narrative right there. On a positive note, you know, Trae Young, man. I mean, obviously that's the easy answer, but he stepped his game up. He reduced his points per game a little bit in the regular season from the 28 points that he's been averaging the last 2 years combined to 26. But his assists jumped up to double digits for the first time in his career, 10.2 assists per game. As of right now, he's still also the playoff leader in assists per game. He's the first player I just want to mention. Now, one knock on Trae is always turnovers. One thing I have to say, though, is all turnovers aren't created equal. Sometimes people just look at a box score and see 4 turnovers, but they don't realize 1 or 2 of those turnovers was actually because the person they were trying to pass the ball to was not doing the right thing. A prime example, there was a play in game 5 of the playoffs, the last Hawks victory of this season, and Trae had the ball kind of on the left wing, and they were running Sadiq Bey's man at Trae, and so Trae passed the ball to the corner because the way the defense was playing, the right play would have been for Sadiq Bey to fade to the corner, and if he faded to the corner, that pass would have resulted in a wide open 3-point shot attempt. But because he didn't, it's tried to break back towards Trae, it ended up being a turnover charge to Trae. But in all honesty, you know, if they were really precision scoring that should have been a turnover charge to Sadiq Bey. Now, with that being said, Trae does clean up the turnover some, cut him down some. I think that's one of the next steps in his development and him taking his game to an even greater level than it already is. Also, I saw an improvement from Trae on defense. He was more active. He got in front of guys. He's learning how to shoot the passing lanes to get steals. He's ripping guys, you know, by being more aggressive against ball handlers. So I definitely saw an improvement in his defense, which is another positive from Trae. And another negative I go with from Trae was his shooting percentages this year. His shooting percentages overall did go down. Now, he went through a stretch around February, March, where he shot the ball very well, where his percentages were back up, you know, what they were for the whole season, the previous season. And what we've been noticing from Trae is he has had good shooting year and is shooting to drop the next year. And like this past season, you know, the 2021-22 season, he shot career highs across the board. Then it dropped back down this season in the 2022-23 season. So I'm gonna go ahead and go on record around the ATA. You know, that's what we do. And I'm gonna project that Trae will follow that same pattern and either shoot a career high next year or come very close to matching his last year totals.
Okay. Well, one thing I want to follow up, Jordan, on what you were saying in regards to, well, actually, John, one in regards to Trae being, you know, part of the main cog of the offense, obviously, right? Trae had 10 assists a game in a non-motion offense. Think about that. And I always bring this up during certain games where you have three people standing behind the three-point line. You got Clint at the bottom and there's Trey at the top. And somehow he's getting the ball to people even though they're not moving anywhere, right? So you have that aspect to where if we ever got a motion, a true motion offense, how many more assists would Trey get per game? Just to let you know. Now, on John's point in regards to, again, Trey being the main cog of the offense, I want to go ahead and remind people of that with the following video again.
Dan Hunter. And here's Young. Backtrack. 5-2. Young. Let's go. And
a superstar player who will take the shot and hit the shot on a halfway dog on a regular basis. He is the person who can put you on their shoulders like all these other teams have their stars to do. We have it. And unfortunately, there's still a whole bunch of people who don't want him in town for some crazy reason. I don't understand it. When he's averaging 26 and 10, how many players in the NBA currently are averaging 26 and 10 on any kind of that's not a center and averaging 26 and 10 rebounds or something like that. He's doing it 26 and 10 assists every night. You see what I'm saying? So that's one thing that we definitely have as a positive on our team. We do have Trae Young on our team. We had a player that was put in the Boston Celtics in a position that if we had messed around in one game too, like we should have, and not lost that home game in Atlanta, Game 6 could have been an elimination game for the Boston Celtics instead of the Hawks, right? So that's what we have going into this next coming season. Now, as far as other players, you know, I just kind of mentioned, you know, we talked about Hunter a lot on the show, and I've broken it down. Hopefully you go back and watch the Around the ATL Side Notes episodes on IMTN Worldwide Radio on YouTube. Please go watch that. I don't want to reiterate those too much. Although I do have video, I can pull some of them up. I didn't delete them yet. I can go back and show you some of the mishaps. I don't want to get into that right now. But
let me go ahead. Real quick plug in here, Chris. I'm going to co-sign Chris when he's telling y'all to go watch, those bonus episodes of Around the ATL. Because let me tell you something. This guy breaks down the stats. Talk about like he's me or somebody. I mean, he's putting out all the stats. Anybody who follows me on Twitter and know when I really get into a hotly contested debate about something, Hawks or Falcons, even, I will put basically the Twitter equivalent of a PowerPoint presentation with all the stats you want to see. I mean, everything. And that's the approach Chris takes. In those episodes. So I won't throw a quick plug and co-sign Chris on that. Watch those because he really is giving you all of the numbers to the point where it's pretty much indisputable. Go ahead, Chris, my bad.
I appreciate that. No worries. So as far as other players on the team, we can talk about, you know, Hunter. We can talk about Bogey. We can talk about Murray. And I'm asking for the fans, if you're watching, I see a couple of people watching on the YouTube channel. Appreciate that. 646-652-4479 is the number. Call into the show. Give us your opinions or whatnot. But I do want to talk about John Collins just a little bit, okay? For another year, third year in a row, his attempts went down, okay? And him not being the primary focal point, especially on the roll, not even besides that, but it has hurt. But for the fact that his attempts are going down, if you've ever played basketball, you know that it gets a little bit more difficult when you're not in the flow of the game on the offensive side, especially if you are a post player, especially if you can actually shoot the ball on a regular basis. Now, his shooting slump aside, he still finished inside very high rate, right? Every time he did get the ball, the few times he did get the ball on the post, he usually scored, right? But to get into a flow to where you can get quote-unquote hot, you got to touch the ball a couple of times. And it's not always touching the ball and shooting. It's just having the ball. You see what I'm saying? And I do my basketball videos on Sunday nights, and I talk about this all the time. My team just won 5 straight games again last Sunday. One of the main reasons, I'm going in the post, and I'm looking for my teammates. I'm creating offense because whether or not people are cutting to the basket and I'm getting them a wide open layup, or they're cutting and moving around the three-point line, and I'm giving them angles where I'm passing them the ball for a wide-open three-pointer, or guess what? I'm throwing up the baby hook or I'm doing the turnaround jumper. It's because I got the ball. You see what I'm saying? So when you have the ball one way or the other, you're involved in that offense. You know you're involved in the offense. When you're only getting seven shots a game in a 48-minute night, that ain't great at any sort of time. And it's hard for you to get into rhythm. You see what I'm saying? It's the same thing in football. If you're not getting passes thrown to you, it's hard for you to get into a rhythm. If you're not getting the ball where you're getting to run the ball, then you're not getting hit a lot. One of the first things you hear when the running back gets hit, they want to get that first hit in there, right? They want to get the juices flowing, so to speak, right? When you're not involved in actual offense, it's a human nature thing. It's not that they're not professional. It's the game itself where you're not as in tune as you would be if you were involved and you know you're involved, even if you're setting a screen for somebody. You see what I'm saying? Which is something that we should be doing like wholeheartedly this year. So I'm hoping that John is actually going to be taken away from standing on that three-point line, which I talked to his mom. That was something he was told to do. I'm going to let y'all know it, okay? And he is actually put back into that position where he is that primary role guy again. And we know that when, you know, him and Big O play together, that's what happens. And all of a sudden, you see John have these big games. It's not a fluke. All you got to do is watch the games. So hopefully they'll be able to integrate that no matter who's on the team next year around him, because he's a big part of our team. If we have him on our team. His sophomore season, his second year in the league, he was 19-10 player. His third year, 21-10. So why did we go away from him to where all of a sudden he's 17-6 and 16 and now all of a sudden 13 points a game? When he can hit all the shots. He can hit threes, he can hit twos, he can hit from anywhere on the court, and he is a pristine finisher in the inside, and he's exciting at that, right? And then on top of that, he has improved his defense as well. Block shots, the rebounds, the blocking out. He's done his duty on that end. But we're not utilizing him. And again, I'm sorry, but Clint can't hit a jumper. He can't hit a three. He can't hit free throws. And often than not, he misses on the inside way too much for him being the center. That's just facts. It happened. Okay. So I'm hoping that there's some kind of transition of some sort for John, because he could be a focal point on our team for a long time to come and help us win some championships. So I just had to throw that out there about John. Mr. Harris, we haven't heard from you in a minute. I want you to go ahead and speak your piece real quick.
Well, let me just add real quick, sir, that I agree with you on John Collins' improvement on defense. Not only as a help defender, but that culminated in that play-in win with him actually defending Jimmy Butler one-on-one oftentimes.
Good point.
And making it very hard for Butler to score inside, forcing him to be more of a jump shooter. And that was a big part of the Hawks winning that play-in game. John, go ahead, sir.
Now, John Collins and Trae Young, this year in the offseason, they definitely need to work. They really need to work. John Collins especially. John Collins has the size, as far as height is concerned, to be able to dominate, okay? But he needs the size, because in the Eastern Conference, yes, in the Eastern Conference, you're going to get bumped, you're going to get knocked, you're going to get hit, and there aren't going to be any foul calls. There are not going to be any foul calls, especially if you play in Boston. You know, nobody has gotten a call worth speaking about in Boston since Kareem days. Okay, so, and I mean, it's not just the Hawks, it's everybody. Trae Young.
We'll go back farther, Bill Russell them days.
Oh, yeah. You know, the 76ers just complain about it. The Washington Bullets, Cleveland, Chicago, everybody, Detroit. I mean, that's just the way it is. So, you have to be the size and strength of a player to be able to absorb it as well as dish it out. You know, I'm just like Charles Barkley. You're going to call a foul, let me give you a foul to call. All right. Now, Trey Young, if he does have aspersions to become like Steph Curry, he's got to work. Because Steph Curry, once he gets rid of the ball, does not go and stand off to the side and not move. Steph Curry is a perpetual motion machine. Trey Young needs to learn that.
Well, let me real quick, John. That's also a point of the offense that they actually run as well, because he can't just run by himself. Everybody is moving on that team. Everybody is setting screens on that team. So that's a team effort part of that, to where you got to be on the same page to be able to do that. Because if just one player is running around and moving and everybody else is still standing still, it don't do you nobody no good. Because nobody knows, oh, we're supposed to be passing this ball until somebody gets the open shot. We have not had that on our team. So that's a matter of the drilling and the practice and the practice and the drilling to make that a natural thing for everybody, to where, one, get in shape for sure, because we're going to move and have that implemented. Because without that, that has to be something that's taught. That's not something that just comes naturally. That's something that was ingrained in that team per the offense. So I just wanted to say that real quick.
Well, let me add to that. I do see John's point to a degree, though, because when you watch the tape, not only does he kind of stand there a lot of times, he stands far back, too, to where it's not even an easy angle to pass him the ball unless they just totally leave him, which we know he can't shoot from far back. But at the same time, I don't really want Trey to be Steph Curry. Because Steph Curry almost plays more like a shooting guard, where he's always consistently running off screens. I don't think you take the ball out of Trey's hands, because he's the best passer in the game, in my opinion. I mean, ain't too many you can argue that with, maybe James Harden. I mean, maybe LeBron, but LeBron didn't have the numbers in assists this year to really put up an argument.
I agree. I don't say it like that, but on the basis of some plays, they need to be doing that, because he is a shooter.
Yeah,
so.
That's why gonna go, Chris, that you want to mix in him coming off screen, but you don't want him to be like Steph Curry doing that all game, every game. That's my point there. But I do see John's point, the way he can be better with his off-ball movement, and I agree with you. Some of that needs to be put in the offense, where there's a screen and there's a prescribed motion, a prescribed place he's supposed to run, prescribed screen he's supposed to come off of, and that way, you know, I think that's how you get him to do it better. But when there's not a screen, you know, he does need to kind of not just stand for off all the time, kind of cut a little bit, kind of get close to the line at times. You know, just have a little bit more movement within his area to give his teammates a better passing angle and make it tougher to guard. John, go ahead, sir. Continue. My apologies.
Oh, no. See, I take what you guys bring, what it is that you say, and I just put it on in the stew and just start stirring. Hey, man, you know. Now, I agree with both of you. Now, the analogy that I gave a few minutes ago about DeJounte Murray and Trey Young both being on the floor. Now, DeJounte Murray served as shooting guard, but DeJounte Murray is a point guard. Trey Young is a point guard. I'm not really sold on having two point guards on the floor. I'm not really sold on that, because it's just like at times they just like putting two positive poles on a magnet together. They cancel each other out. They counter each other because of DeJounte Murray's training down there with Pop, what Trey Young has been used to doing since he's been here, or been allowed to do since he's been here. And like I said, the integration of those two together, see, Kevin Huerter was supposed to be our shooting guard. Okay, Kevin Huerter has nowhere near the movement, the skill set of a Trey Young, except for his chosen role as a shooting guard. I'm supposed to be getting points from you because you're supposed to be my first option, or first, second option to pass the ball to when I bring it up. Because Trey Young, if you look at it, gentlemen, Trey Young, when he was by himself here as the, you know, the option, he was doing two jobs. He's the point scorer as well as a facilitator. And the point guard's job is to facilitate, okay, not be the leading scorer. That's why people did what they did this year as well as what Miami did to him in Miami, because they knew that if you stop Trae Young, you stop the Hawks. Okay? Now, since that was the case, that's what they concentrated on doing. They double-teaming Trae Young from the inbound pass. They double-teaming Trae Young as soon as he come across the half-court line. All of that type of stuff. And, you know, you were looking for somebody else to help him out, somebody to pass the ball to, somebody to get the ball to so that they can, you know, so they can run their offense or do whatever. And, I'm just kind of torn because I believe that this is what Schlenk was suspecting would happen when he didn't want to give up that much for Murray to get him here and how Murray was going to fit in. You know, now, I'm telling you, gentlemen, it was just kind of confusing. And it was just kind of confusing as to, you know, the integration of DeJounte Murray into the offense, what Trae Young's role was going to be, him adjusting to a DeJounte Murray, as well as all of the roiling going around as to how Nate supposedly was treating him and what was going on as far as that was concerned.
Well, let's do this, John. As you continue to talk about that, let's go ahead and start talking about on the coaching side of things and how that, how the current season and then how the end of the season and going into the future. So continue with your point, but we're going to talk about coaching for a little bit now.
When Trae Young first got drafted, you know, even with Lloyd Pierce, the first thing that I started noticing was that the team that was compiled needed to have a Hubie Brown or Mike Fratello coaching them. That's what they needed, because the thing was, I was just under the impression that these people didn't know the basics about basketball, playing defense, scoring, not turning the ball over, all that type of stuff. When Nate McMillan took over, it was just like Pat Riley coaching a Magic Johnson, James Worthy, Kareem, people who knew what to do, that he figured that they knew what to do, and he didn't have to get into that intimate one-on-one coaching and be running up and down the floor like Fratello used to do when he was coaching the Hawks. But these people needed coaching. I mean, they needed coaching during practice. They needed coaching during the game. They needed to be like treated like Thibodeau treats New York, you know, had to be in their behinds all the time, because they didn't bring, a lot of them didn't bring any prerequisites with them, you know. Now, Chris, I could have doggone, if you wanted me to mess up a game, oh, I could have came out there and messed up a game way cheaper than what you're paying these folks to mess a game up with, if you understand what I'm saying. You know, there are things that I'm feeling, and I remember expressing this to you guys once before, there are things that I'm feeling that you should know, that you should just know, you know, but they don't. And these people needed training like that. They really needed it. You know, they weren't getting it out of Nate, because, you know, it was just a thing where Nate didn't feel that, you know, he had time to do that or didn't have a desire to do that.
And one of the things, I'm going to interject real quick, in an analogy
I'm through. Yeah, you all take it.
One of the things on the coaching analogy side that I've always brought to the attention of everybody over the last 4 or 5 years is that making the assumption that somebody knows what they're doing because they're called a professional, if you're trying to win, can't be accepted. Because if it's clear that they don't, and you don't want to take the responsibility to actually teach what they don't know, then that's on you as the leader. As a manager, all the management positions I've ever had, everything is on me, the good and the bad. If people do good in the restaurant, great. I get credit for that. But if Evander Holyfield don't get his drink on time, that's my fault one way or the other, even though I wasn't personally serving him, right? If Chris Tucker is there and his face is cold, guess what? That's my fault because one way or the other, I'm running things at that point, right? I have to take the brunt of that, and then I got to fix it on top of that to where it never happens again. That's the whole point of being the leader. If you want to be the leader, you got to take the good and the bad. You got to be over everything in that organization, everything on the sales floor, everything in the restaurant, and everything that happens on the team is your responsibility. You can't just leave it up in the air, just twiddling around and hoping for the best, and it sticks. If you can see that a person don't know how to block out, you ain't got to fix that. They don't know how to switch or rotate properly. We keep overhelping year after year after year after year, and our numbers say it, that we're always losing games because we're giving up 78 points in the paint and 25 second chance points and 20 fast break points. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense to not address it when it's addressable and it can be fixed. And that's where that coaching acumen definitely comes into play, to where you're recognizing that and you care that it's happening. There was a point where Nate personally said, I don't think it's a problem that we keep losing leads. He said that in December, y'all. I don't think it's a problem. It's not a problem, you know. So just the lackadaisicalness of it all came down to, well, what really even matters there? Because if we're not going to do anything on defense, we're not going to run an actual offense, then we got to get lucky to win a game. Is that what we're saying? And that's what basically happened this whole season. We lost, and as Jordan mentioned the other day, we lost two more games than we lost last year. That ain't good. You see what I'm saying? So that's why this season was so disappointing, because talent-wise, as John said, on paper, we had no business being in the position that we were in. And we would show the flashes, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was at the Boston game in December when we got blown out on ESPN. 2 days before that, though, we're beating Milwaukee in Milwaukee straight up. And we came back home and laid an egg like that, and I had to fight Boston fans all night long. I drove 2 hours for that game. That wasn't cool for me to have to sit through that. So those were just some of those, you know, again, we lost 13 games, even though we had a 10-point lead or more. We lost the game anyway, right? We lost almost 20-something games where we were within 5 points or less with 3 minutes to go. We lost those games. That was the season right there. We just turned that around. We're fourth in the East, easily fourth in the East, right? So that's where it comes down to direction. And that's where I said, you know, with the coaching change happening when it did, there's goods and bads to that. But, you know, going into the future, we're going to have a plan. We will have a recognition of an identity and things of that nature. We don't know who all is going to be on the coaching staff overall, but we know those things are going to be addressed. Well, they have to be addressed, because otherwise we can't afford to waste another season of Trae Young and John and these guys being on the team. There got to be a breaking point, right? So that's why I think this season, more so than any, is going to be very important. But we got a taste of it again. We should have beat Boston first round. We should have beat them straight up. And I think a lot of people know it. Boston definitely knows it, right? So I think we should be excited. Go ahead.
I said should have won games 4 and 6.
We should have won those games. So we should be really excited about what happens this offseason on the teaching end and the grasping of the concepts on a wholehearted basis. As John mentioned, hopefully Trae gets a little bit bigger in size. John gets a little bit bulkier, you know, things of that nature. Everybody really wants to work the off season and get these habits that they've learned, or they got to unlearn the unlearnable stuff that they never should have been learning in the first place. They got to get it out of their system once and for all. And this is going to be that time where, once you do have this actual coaching staff coach this team, and if they're still doing this stuff in the regular season, okay, now we got to make a decision on the players. You see what I'm saying? And that's going to be definitely apparent in this particular case. So I just wanted to kind of get that out there a little bit. Any other further talk on the coaching staff? Because I do want to get into the last couple of things before we got about an hour left. I want to make sure we get everything tonight. But any other things about coaching y'all want to mention?
Yeah, I definitely want to hit on what both of y'all just said. First of all, I do agree with you, Chris. Ultimately, the buck stops with the head coach. He is responsible. So I certainly agree with you there. And oftentimes, I don't feel like they took accountability. He blames our energy all the time on stuff, as opposed to anything to do with his scheme. I also agree with John. This team needed coaching. That laid back, you know, let the players figure it out stuff, that's not for this young team. So, yeah, we needed a more hands-on coach. We needed a guy that's animated, and we needed a guy that's on the sideline. You see video of him in practice showing, sitting down while everybody else is out on the court. You see him, Coach Quinn Snyder, sitting at the table with DeAndre Hunter watching film. That's the type of stuff this team needed, and that we just weren't getting that out of date. To hit on John Collins, I'm a John Collins fan. Everybody knows that. You talk about his stature or what have you. To me, it doesn't really affect him in finishing. He finishes well through contact. Where it affects him is getting positioned before he gets up in the air, before he gets the ball and goes into what he's doing. You know, he can be rooted out at times, and that's something gets stronger and maybe adding a little bit more weight. Would help prevent. Ultimately, for John Collins to be successful, Clint Capella, and we're going to talk about that here in a minute, but there's an issue, just like we talk about a fit with Trey and DeJounte, is a worse fit between John Collins and Clint Capella, and I'll save the rest until we talk about, you know, potential changes or whatnot.
We can start now.
I just want to go hit on a couple other things John talked about. You mentioned Kevin Huerter a couple of times. Let me tell you something. Kevin Huerter is living off of that one game seven he had against Philadelphia. It was a great game. He helped us win a series against a higher seeded team, pull off a major upset, and he was appreciated for it. But the series after that against Milwaukee, he shot 26.3% from three-point range. The series after that, against Miami, he shot, the following year, he shot 29% from three-point range. This year with the Sacramento Kings in the playoffs, in that seven-game series, he shot 20.5%, not 25%.
Four out of the seven games, he didn't even score double digits. In the Miami series, he didn't score double digits but two times in that five-game series. So,
right, eight out of 39. From three this year in the postseason. So Kevin Huerter is a playoff choke artist. You know, I think that if he would have been given the same amount of minutes here as Kevin Huerter got, AJ Griffin could have done what Kevin Huerter did for him. Okay, as a rookie, as a 19-year-old rookie. So I don't really like to hear a lot of crying about Kevin Huerter not being here. Now, did we not get something to help our team this year with Kevin Huerter? No, we did not. I mean, Justin Holiday didn't help our team. Nothing we got from Sacramento helped our team, but we are still getting a future first-round draft pick in that trade, which that could be put into a trade to help us get an even better player, or we might just draft the player that ends up being Kevin Huerter. Can't be much worse than Kevin Huerter is in the playoffs. The guy's a playoff choke artist. I'm glad he's gone. They made the right decision to get rid of him. I also disagree with you, John, on the DeJounte Murray trade. I don't know. I'm not saying if I disagree, but I'll say this. To fully make a determination on that DeJounte Murray situation with Travis Schlenk, I would need to know what Schlenk's plan was to do if we did make that Murray trade. Because if he was just planning on bringing the same cast of characters back, the guy whooped by Miami, you know, just as a draft pick, AJ Griffin, I wouldn't have liked that plan. Give me Murray over that. Because, you know, people talk about a high price. Yeah, three first-round draft picks, but, I mean, the Bucks got Drew Holiday for three first-round draft picks. We didn't really give up a player of consequence when you talk about Gallo because Gallo was on the decline. Now, he did help us. I will say Gallo did help us. But, you know, if you look at the fact, he also blew out his knee this year and didn't even play with Boston this year. So, I think to give up a player you were going to cut anyway because you weren't going to pay Gallo $25 million or whatever it was, $20 million. Whatever it was to come back. I think it might have been 25. Only five of them was guaranteed. That's why, you know.
Scoring maybe 10 or 11 points a game average, which that's what Sadiq Bey was giving us, too. So right. Kind of evened that out.
Buzz, Yeah, not at that. You weren't going to bring him back at that money. You just want to do that. So to turn that money into DeJounte Murray, I like the move. Now, I do agree with John that the fit was not the best fit between him and Trey. I kind of, you know, look back at the Sacramento backcourt recently when they had Halliburton and Fox. Both of those guys are very good players, but they just weren't a great fit. And when Halliburton was traded away, you see Sacramento become a number three seed and make the playoffs, even though they were bouncing the first round, thanks to Kevin Herter. That's kind of my thoughts on it. And I say that, you know, and we're getting ready to go into this, but I'll let you guys speak on it before me. But I say having that extra guy on your roster is a better asset than having Gallo and three first-round picks moving forward. So in case you do want to shake some things up and make some changes, you got a guy who could be a very good starting point guard for your team. Now, also to speak on DeJounte Murray, and finally, before I pass to you guys, I think a big reason why he didn't play as well, and he put up these numbers, but when he didn't play as well as we thought he could play at times, was due to coaching. I mean, you got a guy who's a pick-and-roll point guard, like both of you guys mentioned, but yet he's just standing in the corner when Nate McMillan was here for the most part. And so he's taking one of his career-high years in three-point attempts, which is not his strength. And when he does get the ball and attack, he's often having to drive from a standstill position, you know, try to weave through a defense, which he can do. But you don't want – like, that's a hard way to earn it every time. You know what I mean? Like, you want to have some stuff mixed in. Now, with Quinn Snyder, we did see a few more dribble handoffs in the system. You know, Quinn, he let the guys push the pace more than he let Nate do it, which helps when you got another ball handler and you're running more. You saw him, and he encouraged the team to shoot more threes, but he was also specific that he wanted DeJounte to keep attacking and to shoot his mid-range because he knew that that's DeJounte's strength. You know what I mean? So
playing to your strengths is important.
Right. So I do think a large part of the reason why, you know, he wasn't properly utilized was due to coaching. But now, to speak on one negative about him, the player himself, well, I'll mention a positive before I go there. He's great at ripping the ball from opponents, getting in the passing lanes and getting steals, but his on-ball defense was not as good as I anticipated this season. Too often, even in the postseason as well, guys went by him. He was not, you know, able to stop the ball at the point of attack, which I don't quite understand why that's the case. The man is quick. He's got long arms. You know, you would think that he blocked more shots, like in the playoffs, for example. Trey had a higher block average than he did, in the playoffs. So I was a little bit disappointed in his individual one-on-one defense. But I do think that if he is still here next season, that, you know, with Quinn Snyder instituting a more motion offense, you can see, you know, much better results and, you know, much more efficiency out of him. I don't think you ever totally take the ball out of Trae Young's hands, like I said before, because he's the best passer in the game. But you can mix it up a little bit more, you know, to where DeJounte is setting him up at times and to where DeJounte is actually getting the ball on the move, either with a pick or on a cut or off a dribble handoff where he's able to just attack in motion rather than having to try to attack from a standstill position. Go ahead, guys.
646-652-4479 if you want to call into the show. I'll just say our pace of play definitely improved. It doesn't make any sense for us to play as slow as we do, like we have a bunch of old men on our team. It's not cool. It held us back. That was not cool just on that basis. And as far as, again, I'll go back on the Trey and the turnovers again. When you do have the ball like he does, because he is trying to pass, I've said this since his rookie season in summer league, Trey is trying to get 15 assists a night. To get that many assists, you are going to be passing the ball. And Jordan mentioned earlier, sometimes a missed assist is not a turnover. It's just that the player didn't get where he was supposed to be. But let me just throw out there real quick, and I should have pulled this up, but there's also some Hall of Famers who also 4.5 turnovers, 5 turnovers, Magic Johnson, Jason Kidd. We can go on and on as far as that goes, but it's because you're trying to get their teammates the ball. Trey could easily be getting 2 assists a game and scoring 36 a night. Do we want that version of Trae Young? I don't, because he's one of the best passers in the game, and he needs to be that facilitator on our team. We're better with him being that type of a player. He just happens to be able to score, too. And we can get a good balance of that and win with that. We proved that. 2 years ago, we should have went to the finals. So I don't want to pull back really that much from Trae in that aspect of his game for sure. Go ahead, Jordan.
I just said, I've got it real quick. I don't have turnovers per game, but I have the total career NBA turnovers leaders.
Appreciate
read
that.
A few names out for you. Number one, LeBron James. Number two, Karl Malone. Three, Russell Westbrook. Four, John Stockton. Five, Kobe Bryant. Six, Jason Kidd. Seven, Moses Malone. Eight, James Harden. Nine, Isaiah Thomas. 10, Hakeem Olajuwon. He jumped down 13, Magic Johnson. 15, Steve Nash. 16, Tim Duncan. 17, Charles Barkley. 18, Dwayne Wade. 19, Shaquille O'Neal.
You're not cutting none of those guys, people.
Right. Leonard was some of the best players who ever played the game of basketball. Now, there's one name missing from that list. That's Mr. Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the GOAT. But a lot of the best players that played this game on that list.
Yeah. John Wade says you.
Now, gentlemen, I agree, you know, with everything you guys are saying. Say it, the issue with a Trae Young, I'm going to say the thing with Trae Young instead of say issue, is that he is a dual threat. He's a dual threat. Like I said, he definitely needed a Tonto to ride with him being the Lone Ranger, okay, to get some scoring out of him. And see, just like you said earlier, Chris, about the fact that Trae Young's leading the league in assists. He could have more assists if that first person that he has found that is open, that he passes to, could hit the shot. If they could hit the shot, man, you know, Trae Young would have 7, possibly 15, 16 assists per game as an average, you know. But we didn't have anybody that could do that. You know,
well, that's
not necessarily
true. Let me stop it right there, because if that was true, Murray ain't scoring 20 points a game if he wasn't hitting no shots, okay? Let's say that. And Hunter, for what he is, he did have 15 a game himself as well. So that ain't necessarily true. And then, of course, with the mix-up of the roster, you know, coming off the bench and stuff like that, you did have Bogey, you did have AJ. They hit a lot of shots. So, again, we went from a 12-point-a-game to a 20-point-a-game player at the shooting guard position. So I only will counter on that as far as that part goes. But go ahead.
I think I can understand
what John said in terms of he doesn't have a Karl Malone to pass the ball to. He doesn't have a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to pass the ball to.
Well, he does. It's John. He's just not getting the ball because he keeps giving it to Quint. But
yeah. I mean, I like John.
I get on that later. But I'll definitely get on Clint later. But see, in countering what you were saying, Chris, now Hunter would receive the ball not always from Trae. A lot of people, they would receive the ball second and third hand, okay? And sometimes Hunter would bring the ball up. Now, but your point is well taken as far as that's concerned. And I'm by no means in saying that, you know, well, then again, I got to say, that a lot of times people will be open as a Waffle House on Christmas morning and clink, clink, clunk all day long. I'm sitting here, I'm just going crazy because, see, I know, like I told you before, I can miss shots for you all day long if you're going to pay me a $30 million a year. I miss all the shots you want me to miss for $30 million a year. I'll do it cheaper, okay? But the thing is that our possessions, just like that Boston game six, it was just a small little window of time in the fourth quarter where we went cold, Boston scored, we didn't respond, you know, because we were playing good defense, hands in faces, doing everything we could except fouling. But these people, the way that they shoot, you know, you got to match shot for shot with them from time to time. You got to do that with Boston. hey, these people went to the East, went to the finals last year, doing what they did this year. And see, when we fell behind, when we were not able to match their intensity, match their shooting, we were in trouble. And we couldn't catch up. We couldn't catch up, you know. So,
well, John had a pretty decent tail end to that series. But again, AJ didn't get a chance to play at all. I'll say that right now. I think he should have gotten some.
We got to deal with that. We got to deal with that, Chris.
Shooter, yeah, you know, I disagree with just benching him. As far as that goes, Bogey played pretty good. You know, he had a pretty decent series as well. Bay definitely helped us out as far as that goes. But again, Hunter, you know, between the layups that he kept giving up. And again, if you go watch the previous videos on IMTN Worldwide Radio, there's two videos. Go watch those in regards to Hunter. You can go look those up. But I have video of the layups. He was a layup line, unfortunately. And then on the top of that, the shots that he was missing, I mean, he was not shooting at all at an efficient enough rate as the wing player, the primary, to be able to go basically the toe-to-toe part, right? You either had to stop somebody on the other side or you got to hit all your shots. And if neither of those things are happening, we're in trouble, you know, and that's where a lot of those gaps were, you know. So, you know, that's where I'm asking now. Like next year, we actually don't have 2023, we only have Aaron Holiday and Trent Forrest is a restricted free agent. But 2024, you have Murray, Big O, Sadiq, Bit, Tyrese, and Donovan Williams as basically restricted free agents, but they're all free agents. Murray will be an unrestricted free agent. So what changes do any of y'all think will happen this particular offseason as far as the roster goes? Do you believe that many of the players will be back? Are there any particular moves you know will be made or should be made in your opinion? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, you know, first of all, for some of the guys like, you know, Trent Forrest, you know, no disrespect to him, but there's a meme out there with Adam Silver with the caption, "Get ready to learn Chinese, buddy." Trent Forrest might need to look into the Shanghai Sharks or the Guangzhou Tigers there. But on a serious note, though, I don't know what will happen. The reason why I say that, I know normally I love to make predictions, but these guys are so new, Landry Fields and Kyle Korver, it's hard to predict them because we don't really have any type of sample size for them as general managers. Now, what do I think should happen? The first thing I'll get into, and I'll let it come back around before I get into my second thing as far as roster moves, but Clint Capella needs to go. That's the first thing, okay? I know he's a very good rebounder. I understand that, okay? But yet we saw, you know, the numbers dip to 8 rebounds a game in the playoffs this past year, you know what I mean? He has a harder time rebounding when he has to check anybody that's some type of stretch big. Yeah, just going to pull him away from the paint. And, you know, as good as he is as a rebounder, though, he's just not that good of a rim protector. Guys always shoot a high percentage against him in a restricted area. He does not block a lot of shots. And ultimately, offensively, he's just too one-dimensional. He's not a good free throw shooter. He has no jump shot, doesn't have a real hook shot or anything like that, no post moves you can go to. Misses a lot of layups around the basket. The only thing that you can really count on from Clint Capella is a dunk. Like when Trey throws that lob, he's going to throw that down, you know, 9 times out of 10. But as a whole, I just don't think he brings enough to the table, enough versatility to the table. He's not a good passer either. Ultimately, I think that's what you got to do. You got to move on from Clint Capella. I think Okongwu is ready to start. If that's the direction you want to go, then you can bring in a more of a stretch big as your backup center. So that way you can play some 5 out with your second unit. Go a little bit offensively. You can put Lee John in with the second unit with the stretch big and let him be the primary role man that entire time, which we know is his strength. I think that's the best way to go. Like I said, you know, with Clint, especially with Clint not even being a good passer either, And a Conley is a pretty good passer for a big. I think that will be the first thing the Hawks can do to make an improvement will be to move Clint out, get some type of asset for him, and start a Kongu and have a backup big that's a stretch big that can knock down three-pointers and make his layups and free throws.
One of the things that you saw that was pretty, you know, apparent is that if Clint was right there in the paint in the midst of, you know, an offensive play or whatever, and he got the ball, he's not making an offensive move to be able to score. He's now trying to pass it back out again. And that's a detriment because at that point, you're playing 4-on-5. And we played way too much 4-on-5 this year on offense. To not have that as an asset, it hurts because it's obvious that, it's ready. He has a better shot than he had before, and now he can hit three a little bit too now, right? But he can hit the 15-footer. He can hit that. He's comfortable shooting it, and he always has had post moves as well. He finishes inside. He hits his free throws as well, right? On the defensive side, we know he plays the post defense well. He can move up on the pick and roll, right? And we know he can block shots as well. So I think it's time for him as the sixth pick in the draft to go ahead and utilize him as that starter. And as Jordan mentioned, definitely having somebody as a stretch big to back him up at that point puts us at an advantage because now you're not losing anything when you go to the bench. You know what I'm saying? You can continue with an offense because anybody on that court can hit a shot at any given time. That opens it wide up for anybody that we play. So I think that would be a big move right there just off the rip. Go ahead, Jordan.
Before John goes, I did want to, because I was looking up some numbers after what sort of things John was saying. To back up your point, John, I would agree with you in terms of trade assists to a degree because we were 21st in the NBA in three-point shooting. Obviously, trade threes are figured into that. We were also 16th in two-point shooting. So I think you make a valid point there, John. Let's say we were 10th in three-point shooting instead of 21st, and we were, you know, 7th. And two-point shooting, then I think you see Trey with 12, 13, 14 assists a game. So I will say that your point was valid looking at just off the numbers alone there, John.
Oh, man. When they got Clint Capella and I asked, why did you get him? Oh, we're just getting him for rebound. He's going to be a defending rebound. You know, I don't understand. And the reason I have a big problem with it is because I was Clint Capella at one time. Only thing I could do was block shots, rebound. I'd be out there on the floor. I'm looking for somebody to pass the ball to because I don't have nobody around me because you remember what they used to say a long time ago, he's self-checked. He's self-checked. You don't have to worry about checking him. He can't shoot. So thing was that, hey, I need to learn how to shoot. I need to learn moves. I need to be able to get to the basket. You know, and see me being 6'3", at that time, I was the tallest person they used to play. He put me up against everybody, whatever. And, you know, I had to play center. And, you know, back during the, late 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever, only thing a center did, lay the ball up, get a dunk every now and then, you know, until you had Akeem Olajuwon coming and you had Patrick Ewing and Kareem and people like that. Now, team being the way that it is, and with all of the scouting that people have done on the Hawks, especially the Eastern Conference Finals, they know what Clint Capella can do. They know what Clint Capella can't do. And they know that he's mostly a setup for a lob. If it wasn't for him, it was for John Collins for a lob. Okay, now John Collins has a more versatile offensive game than Clint, but Clint was challenged. Okay, now, I can't afford to have that. No one should come out of high school, college, AAU ball, nowhere coming into the pros being a one-trick pony. No. And I have railed ad infinitum about the free throw shooting. This man has a hitch in his shot worse than Charles Barkley's putt that Nobody took care and nobody took the time to get out of this shot. You let this man just go all through the pros with no shot. About bad as Sean Marion's shot, that old push and pull miss he used to shoot. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I'll see Clint Capella. I remember in the Boston series, Clint Capella was out there a couple of times looking around for somebody to shoot, just like Chris just said, looking for somebody to give the ball to. Man, oh, man, I mean, it was the worst thing because, see, just as soon as he started looking around, all right, now you don't have anybody to pass the ball to because, number one, they're doubling Trey and everybody else has a man on it.
You know? Basketball.
Yeah.
Chris,
yeah. And
what you have with Clint defensively is oftentimes when he's coming over to help on defense, he takes these wild angles where he gives ground and goes underneath the basket and lets the opponent get deep enough to just lay the ball up over him.
He'll be like this, and he'll turn, and then he won't move and just get in front. And, I mean, you got to force him to pass the ball that one more time, but he'll just let him lay it up and then be looking around. I'm like.
Right. If he actually stops the ball and they start to shoot that way, he might get more blocks that way. But when you get so deep that you're standing underneath the basket, these NBA, even if they're smaller than him, they're going to put the ball in. These guys, you know, they're glue using the glass. They know angles. You know, once you let them get that deep, you're in trouble. And so that's another issue I have with him. Just he's not the defensive anchor, the rim protector that you like to be the guy that just rebounds. If you got a guy that's just rebounding defense, that Joker better be playing like Ben Wallace. And Clint ain't even, he don't even deserve to be mentioned in the same sentence with Ben Wallace. Go ahead, John, sir.
No. And something else, too, that I wanted to mention. Do you guys agree with this 8-man rotation that this man is trying to run? Because, see, now it was not. Okay, at least Nate had a 10-man rotation, all right? Quinn comes, shortens it to 9 for the 20-something games that he was here. Then in the playoffs, he shortens it to 8. Now, what do you guys think about that, if I may ask that, sir?
I think 9 is okay in the playoffs. Just because DeJounte Murray is basically two positions. He's your starting shooting guard and your backup point guard. Even though I would have liked to see A.J. Griffin more, I think 9 regularly is okay. But what I'd like to see is if a guy is just struggling big time, then you go to A.J. Griffin or somebody else. But with the 9, I don't like the fact that Jalen Johnson only played like, I forget what the number was, what did I say? It was 8 minutes a game in the playoffs, something like that. I think if you're going to play 9, use all 9.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Give him decent enough minutes.
Get him where he's acclimated in the game and he's actually feeling he's active, like I talked about John earlier.
Right. 8, I think 8 is putting too much of a strain on guys. So just 8 is not quite properly utilizing all the talent that you have. And so, you know, that's another conundrum I have is how are we going to clear minutes for A.J. Griffin? Because with Bogey being resigned, unless, you know, someone is moved, I'm having a hard time seeing where he's even going to play a lot next year. Let me tell you something. This guy's good enough to play. He got 2 game winning shots. He showed what he can do. He's a pure shooter, but he's more than just a shooter. I mean, he has moves going towards the basket, you know what I mean? And he'll get you rebound. And,
he gets
you
steals.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So that's another dilemma I have, but that's my thoughts on the 8 or 9-man rotation, fellas. Chris?
I believe it's doable. Again, it's a matter of just how you coach, you know, and placement of the players that you have under you. I think some of that going into the end of the season was just a matter of, again, the trying to fill players out. And then because he is, I hate to say it, but rookieism came into play, I think, with AJ as far as Quinn playing him, as far as saying, okay, I'm going to trust you for the playoffs. JJ at least had played last year, and he had played a lot this year to where, you know, you kind of had to play him in a certain point in the playoffs and trust him that he was going to do well as well. But I just didn't think that AJ was going to get enough of a chance with that change where it came. But next year, again, is Garrison going to be here? If Garrison's not here, that's some AJ minutes right there, right? And depending if again, some of this is going to be dependent on whether or not Hunter is here possibly or not, right? You know, as far as that goes. So if that was a change, you know AJ is playing at that point, right, to an extent. So there's going to be, again, we're going to kind of see how things go over the next couple of months to say, you know, do we get to see these young kids really kind of prosper into this new system with Trae Young, with Murray being on the team, things of that nature. Who is going to be the actual, here it is, again, we're trying to find a backup point guard, right? So who's that person going to be? Because it ain't going to be Holiday, you know, for sure, right? So we got to see who that person is going
to
be.
I think you need one, Chris. I mean, you need one on the roster just in case something happened to Trae or DeJounte, but I think you keep letting DeJounte play point when Trae's out of the game, and you just play AJ and shooting
you
guard.
Think so?
You
think
so?
I think we need to have a person who can actually play the position that's better than what Holiday brought. I just think you need to have that. One, because of injuries. One, because of just depth. You know what I'm saying? It's just like in football. Like,
a better third point guard. I still think you give the backup minutes to DeJounte, personally.
I can see that. But yeah, I just think that, you know, we are not that far away. Got Uncle Steve on the chat line, and he was saying that, talking about going into next year, do you think we can give Quinn an off season and see what happens? And, you know, maybe probably without Clint being here. And I said, we're not that far. And then the other thing he said was kind of similar to Kerr taking over when Mark Jackson ended up leaving. And he had kind of, you know, kind of stirred the pot enough to where you got these young players or whatever. But I think in this particular case, again, the teaching part just wasn't really happening a whole heck of a lot in the previous. And I think it was John who kind of mentioned in regards to the type of coaching that you probably should have had. Like, yeah, if Bud had agreed to actually stay and play this out, we might have a championship too. Just saying, you know. With Bud, and I almost should play Bud's interview that I have, that I do have that one queued up, where he's talking about the triangle offense and what he's taken from it and things of that nature. If you go back to, I played it again on a couple of different shows in the past, but when you have those teachings and you have the actual structure of an actual offense and is being implemented, you win games. The Sacramento Kings are a good example of that. They have Mike Brown bring in an actual offense and get this team to play the way they did because they have a structure. Again, I have a whole article talking about, do you really want the guys just doing whatever they want to do? Because it's not working. Melvin Hunt, one of our former coaches here as a Hawks coach, when he took over for the Denver Nuggets a few years ago when George Karl, when he was fired from Denver and Melvin Hunt took over, one of the things that he implemented was kind of like a wide open system where he's trusting the players to do things on the court. But that is if they're cutting to the basket, they're setting screens, and they're always moving without the ball. If you're not doing that, then guess what? The coaching staff has to reel them in and get them to do what they want to do. That was never happening here. The players are just doing stuff, and it was haphazard, and we saw that for the last 2 years. We needed to be able to have better structure on the offensive side, and we needed to be able to have teaching on the defensive side. If we get those two things during this offseason, we're going to see the Hawks become a top three team in the East, period. You see what I'm saying? Because if they're moving the ball on offense, again, offense has never been a problem for the Atlanta Hawks for 5 years. We have always been a top-tier team when it comes to scoring points. The problem comes into the lulls that we have because we're sticking the ball in certain places and then not being able to stop nobody, you know. And so that's where that comes in. If we could have just did those things in pockets just this season, we wouldn't have been a play-in team, right? We would have been at least top 16 at the very minimum just because of that. Because we did have Trae Young on the team. So that's why I'm excited about this offseason. more so than any other offseason, because we do have Quinn. Quinn is bringing in his own staff to do it his way. We don't have any remnants of the old regimes at all now, right? So it's a clean slate. We needed that, right? And so I think this is going to be a turning point for the organization, for the positive. We need it because we really, like, and Jordan's been mentioning this, we can't ever be in a play-in again. It can't happen. It can't happen. You see what I'm saying? Ever again. And we need to be a top. We need to be one of the top tier teams in the league. We can't keep wasting 26 and 10 season from Trey, him leading the league in assists, and we really don't get to see the real fruition of that in the playoffs. We really got to be able to take advantage of this with Trey Young being here. He's actually on our team. He signed to a contract, right? So we really need to take advantage of that. So I'm trying to make sure. Go ahead, Jordan.
The next thing, as far as roster changes, there's so much you can talk about in terms of this one topic alone. But if I were in charge of the Atlanta Hawks, I would also trade DeAndre Hunter. Okay, now, with DeAndre Hunter, we see flashes out of him to where he had this great game, 20-something points. He may actually get you 7 rebounds or 8 rebounds for a change every now and then. But then he drops right back down to his normal, you know, 3 or 4 rebounds, you know what I mean? 12, 13, 14 points.
4 for 13 from the field.
Right. He takes these crazy Carmelo Anthony-style turnaround shots when he just does not have the dexterity nor fluidity to be attempting those type of shots. And he just doesn't seem to want to accept the fact that he's a 3-and-D guy, that he should just take his 1, 2, 3 dribbles at the most, where he squares up and pulls up. He can actually make that shot pretty well. He just shoots his open threes. He can make those pretty well. At times, he's streaky with those. But when he's on, he makes them well. And just, you know, putting the ball in the basket off a cut or a layup or a cut, you know, when you just have the shot there. But instead, he tries to drive in on his own. He's turning the ball over. He's getting the shot blocked. And, fellas, his salary goes up to $20 million next year. We need to go ahead and trade this man before the rest of the league figures out that he tricked us. You know what I mean? And now a lot of Hawks fans say, well, he's a big wing. You got to have that. But when you look at the defensive numbers, they've gotten progressively worse since the second year of the league. The last 2 years, his defense has gotten worse and worse. In that first-round series against Boston, he was half-heartedly reaching that stuff. They were going right by him, laying the ball in, dunking the basketball. You can find other ways to give you what DeAndre Hunter gives you. If you're looking for a defensive type guy, I think a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith is a free agent this year, if I'm not mistaken. There are guys like that out there that you can get that's going to give you better defense. So go ahead and trade this man right now before the rest of the league figured out you got tricked. He might actually still have some value as of right now, especially being that he wasn't hurt as much this past season as he has been prior to that. Gentlemen, your thoughts.
Let me play a couple of clips just in case people say, well, you know, he was being held, you know, in those screens and everything like that. And I'm like, there's two things about that. One, you allow yourself to be held. One, okay? And two, if you really are being held, push your man into the guy so you don't hit a three. Here's some examples of that.
14 threes a game. 14 out of only 33 attempts. So you have to get out on the three ball. Tatum splashes through a three-pointer.
Here's another one.
Did not look like it was deflected by Hunter. Here's Tatum rising and hitting another three. 15 threes in the first half.
If you go back and watch the shows that I did that were concentrated on Hunter, because I played all these clips. I played a lot of stuff video-wise. One of the biggest things about a screen is not allowing yourself to be screened. When you know it's about to happen, there was one screen, I don't know if I can, oh, here it is right here.
The Hawks are 36 to 10 in points in the paint. Who would have thought 36 to 10?
He didn't have to allow himself to get seen by Marcus Smart right there. He could have hedged that screen into where Trey has not put himself in jeopardy over there. But at the same time, you got the person in the post who didn't rotate either. But that's a whole nother story. But half of the times that he's getting magically held and all this kind of stuff, he could have avoided all those. And it's the lackadaisicalism that I really hate about it because, again, I've told y'all this. Y'all haven't seen it, but I do Sunday night basketball videos after I play. Okay, if I'm mismatched because of the screen, because all of a sudden I got the point guard that my big old self has to try to play, you know what we do? We switch it back so we don't have that. Or I don't allow myself to be screened. I go around it to where I'm not screened, and we're calling that out in real time. You see what I'm saying? The other night, as we were winning our five games in a row, I had to get switched off of somebody because I wasn't able to – The guy that I was playing in the last game was basically like their Dennis Scott, and he was just running. And I already played four games in a row, and I'm dead tired by then, but we were still going to try to win this game. They switched me off and put me on somebody else, right? You got to be willing to be able to do that. Now, we don't have a coach. We're doing this ourselves, but the coach has to be able to do it, and or if the player – because if the player doesn't have the self-awareness and or the incapability of doing it, that move has to be made and somebody else put in their place for the sake of winning the game. The goal is to win the game, right? And so when I saw I see these efforts, it's like he's supposed to be better than this because we drafted him as a National Defensive Player of the Year, people. We're supposed to have an expectation that he's great at defense. He's the size of everything like we've been saying, but he gets one or two rebounds a night, maybe. He doesn't get any steals. He's not getting any blocks. He's not running up and down the court. He's not slowing. No, what's his name? Malcolm Brogdon or whatever was laying the ball up on him like it was nothing. Like that was, if that's not cool, I don't know. I'm just saying at a certain point, we got to move off of that. And there's other wings out there. Again, he's not even in the top 20 in defensive categories at all as a small forward. I did that on another show. I broke that down. You see what I'm saying? I broke down a whole bunch of small forwards that are higher than him, and you have to ask the question, why isn't he better than all of these other small forwards in the league? You see what I'm saying? And then the next show I did, here's all the number four draft picks in NBA history over the last 30 years. We don't have no expectation that he's going to be great. I mean – You got to say it just like that to say, if we keep him in this offseason, will he take that final leap and stand to say, I'm going to be that guy? Or, because that's a big risk, I think. That's a big roll of the dice right there. Or do we get a real 3-and-D wing who can play defense and hit that wide open shot?
I mean, I think before I let you go, John, I think the key word you said there was lackadaisical. The man, to be a supposedly defensive-oriented player, he's probably one of the most least hustling defensive players I've ever seen, watching NBA basketball. And the numbers prove it. When you look, there's a stat category. When you really start digging deep in the stats on NBA.com, there's a stat category called hustle stats. And it looks at, deflections and loose balls chased down and charges drawn and all the different hustle stats. DeAndre Hunter is not number one in any of those stats, and he's not top three. He's only top three if I put him. Okay? So that's one thing about it. The guy that's hustle, one of the points that DeAndre Hunter.
Hey, Jordan, we're losing you a little bit on your sound.
Can you hear me, sir?
It sounds like you're distant for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, it changed all of a sudden.
Yeah, it sounds like you're faded out a little bit. You might want to go out and come back in real quick because I don't think we can hear you. Go ahead, John, as he's coming back.
Oh, okay. Now, DeAndre Hunter, he reminds me of Kevin Hurt. That game, what game was that in Miami where he scored 20-something points, okay? That was just like Kevin Herter ending the Philadelphia series with 20-something points. And, I'm thinking, okay, here's the bust-out party. Here's the coming-out party. But, I didn't see anything after that. There was absolutely nothing. You're out there, but you're just occupying space. You're not contributing offensively, defensively. One thing that I noticed about Boston – and I mean each one of them, from Brown to Tatum, and I think it was somebody else, Brown, Tatum, and the point guard or the guard. they shoot at the top of their arm. They shoot at the top of their arm. They don't release the ball right off the top of their head. Their arms are outstretched. So anybody that's not on them, they have no chance at blocking the shot or affecting the shot, okay? When you are shooting top hand like that, you can't stop that shot. You can't stop it. You got to either foul that person or get them before they get that ball above their head, all right? Hunter was doing neither. Hunter was doing neither. And
yeah,
and it was a situation where Hunter had just become a liability. But, you know, Quinn saying, okay, he's a good shooter, he's this, he's that, he's this, he's that, you know, and he's saying that all in the press and everything. And I know that was a coach deflection move, good move, Quinn. But, you know, like Jordan was saying about, you know, putting Hunter on the block and trading and trying to get something for him, I don't believe anybody going to buy that Cadillac. I don't believe anybody's going to buy that Cadillac because, see, people got film. All right? It was
one,
talking the same thing.
Just take one sucker.
Huh?
Can you guys hear me better now?
Yeah, you're good now.
Yes,
you're
sir.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Finish the point I was making real quick. The man's just, he has a lack of hustle. There's a stat category called Hustle Stats on NBA.com. He's only top three in, like, one of them. It's, like, shots contested because he's usually guarding good players. But all the rest of them, like loose balls, deflections, all of those other hustle stats, he's not even top three on the Hawks in any of these stats. So he's just one of the least hustling guys that's supposed to be defensive-oriented that I've ever seen. One other quick stat. Okay, there's a stat called value over replacement player. Okay, and it kind of measures the impact based on all of the different stats combined together. The only non-rookie that plays a lot that has a worse value over replacement than DeAndre Hunter in the entire NBA, Dylan Brooks, gentlemen. So if that don't say a lot, I don't know what does. Go right ahead, John.
Yeah, and I'm Okongwu. Now, one thing that I do not like short players in certain positions. 6'9", we don't have Draymond Green here, okay? We don't have Draymond Green. 6'9" in the center spot, no. I can't do it. We don't shoot good enough for that, okay? Because, see, they cover over Draymond Green, even though Draymond Green has a bit of an offensive game. Yeah, you know, a lot of times he'll look like he can't do anything, but Draymond Green can shoot the three to a certain degree. He can shoot inside. He can drive to the basket. Yes, okay? But he's being covered over by the Splash Brothers and the rest of the offensive players out there in Golden State. If you don't have that, having a little center like that is not going to help you in the Eastern Conference. Because remember, gentlemen, you've got to get out of
the Eastern. I don't know. He played well in the Greek Freaks pretty good. He shut down Cat.
He's a good on-ball defender. I agree with you there. But he's a good on-ball defender, so he kind of offsets that. But I do understand the point. I know, gentlemen, we're getting short on time here. This is the other bombshell
okay.
I want to drop, and I hate the show is getting so late here, but I'm going to say this. I like him as a player. I would not just give him away. But if I could get another young all-star caliber player for him, maybe adding draft pick or something else, a guy like a Jaylen Brown, a guy like a Pascal Siakam, I would seriously entertain trading DeJounte Murray, especially if that player has some years left on his contract, because we know Murray could just leave. If it doesn't work out next year with the fit, Murray could just leave us high and dry the following season as an unrestricted free agent. I'm confident with Jaylen Brown, for example, we traded for him. He signed here because he's from here. You know what I mean? But if I could get another young player that's made at least an all-star team or two, for DeJounte Murray and maybe a little extra asset, I would make the move, not because I don't like Murray as a player, because I took up for him a lot of ways, but I just feel like one of those, if I could get a better fit, You know what I mean? Especially a guy that could play a different position, like how Brown could play the two and the three, like how Siakam could play four and five. Then you could slide A.J. Griffin into the starting lineup and shooting guard. Let Bogey come off the bench behind him and stay in his second role. And you just have another player that fits better with this team. Because ultimately, as much as I love Trey and his ability to score, I think the best thing for this team ultimately would be for Trey's points to go down maybe even a couple points, like 20, 23, 24 points per game, to have somebody else maybe even be the leading scorer for this team, and for Trey to average 12, 13 assists. You know what I mean? I think that's what would get the Hawks to a championship level. Is looking at the question, can the Hawks win a championship? So I'm not sure if they can right now. It's constructed, but I think with the right moves, you know, that it is coming here in the near future.
John?
Me, I don't believe in tearing down a team to go get one player or another player. You know, that's what I, you know, on the other, you know, podcast that I'm on, you know, well, you can package a trade and do this and do that or whatever and go get this person. Okay, well, when that person comes here, what is he going to have around him? You know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's why I get on the scouts. Go find someone on a rookie contract and sign them on a rookie contract or on a free agent contract. You got all of these countries around the world. You even got NBA Africa. They just had a championship. Find someone that you can bring in that you can start, that you can use. I'm looking at the fact, okay, now you brought Bruno Fernando in here. That man is just languishing on the bench. I mean, he's at least six fouls. You know? Yeah. Send him out there and let him tenderize somebody or something, then put it back on the bench. I mean, come on. A lot of these things, you know, they just boggle my mind as to what type of philosophy do you have, okay? Why did you go and get this person? Why are these people here? You know, if you want me to ride the Oak, I'll ride the Oak for $20,000. Win the Golden Splinter Award. But good grief, man, you got to use these people. No sense.
Well, remember, you know, Bruno came in kind of late in the game too, though, you know, and again, you know, Quinn's getting this team with 20 games left in the season, so I think that has a lot to do with it. He didn't really get to, like, work with everybody and just kind of plug and play people. So I think if he stays, I think definitely Bruno has an opportunity to play on the team as a big. But go ahead, John.
Yeah, and, that was during the time we got him right before Nate left. Nate wouldn't even put him in. You remember the man that we had on a 10-day contract that never got in the game? You remember that?
Oh, yeah. What's his name?
I don't know.
Derek. He never got a shot to play.
Yeah. I mean, what? So this man, you just paying money out of all four pocket legs to folk who just going to sit on the bench. I mean, why even show up if you're not going to even go? Oh, man, you know. But you know, that's my contribution. But, you know, I want a bona fide scoring and defensive center. That's what I really want. Matter of fact, while you're in the store, get me two of them.
There'll be something interesting. Well, guys, we're going to be trying to wrap this up. Jordan, if you got a last point briefly. But, John, I want to say thanks for calling into the show and helping us out tonight. Really do appreciate your contributions, as always. And we definitely got to follow up on the Falcons draft as well, sir.
Yes, sir. Whenever you all want to. It was a pleasure being in here with you, gentlemen. And thanks for the opportunity to talk with you.
Appreciate it, man. Take care.
Yes, sir. Always a good discussion there, John.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's the way I want. All right.
My final point is this. I think, you know, John mentioned not tearing the team down, but I think we do have the pieces, especially, you know, if Merv's on those pieces, that we can actually combine some of these guys and switch out a little bit of the talent. I don't think you totally tear the team down in terms of trade like some of these crazy people are saying, but I think you can shuffle the supporting cast around him And I think ultimately, if you have a chance to move some talent to get, you know, a third all-star caliber guy, I think, you know, you got to seriously look at it if you're not giving away too much. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to give away Jalen Johnson and A.J. Griffin. But because we have guys like that, I am comfortable trading a guy like a Clint Capella or DeAndre Hunter and things of that nature. But finally, you know, I don't know if John Collins will be back with his team or not. You know, he may be traded. I mean, we've heard him in rumors almost every year, so it certainly wouldn't surprise me if he's one that's traded. Hope that one doesn't come back to haunt us. I think he will if he goes to somewhere that's a proper fit for him. But, you know, ultimately, I'd love to see him stay, but I understand, you know, if they go in a different direction. Yeah, I'd feel better about it if his replacement is somebody like Siakam. He's been on a couple of all-star teams, you know what I mean, as opposed to just us just giving him away. But, you know, ultimately, man, I think this team, the future is bright. I think we do have a much better coach in here, a guy who could possibly be the right coach. And I'm just hoping, you know, that we could fit the team roster around what's going to fit his system the best, you know, and go from there. Two other quick notes, you know, understand Quinn want to bring his whole staff in, but do want to give respect to Joe Prunty, who drew up a game-winning play for us this year, also was 2-0 in his stint as an interim coach. And I also just wanted to say RIP to Coach Bud. He's still with us. He just got fired today, that's all.
Final saying before we go, we're about to sign off, George. Go ahead.
Well, thanks to everybody for listening out there. As always, you know, thank those for listening live as well as our podcast listeners out there. Love talking Hawks and looking forward to, you know, getting back into shows where we talk all of our sports. But last but not least, I want to thank God for giving me this breath that I breathe to talk about these Atlanta, these Georgia sports that I love.
Make sure you subscribe to the IMTN Worldwide YouTube channel. You can also follow on Facebook and Instagram, and also follow us on Twitter, Intellect ATL and Jordan23. That being said, we're going to go ahead and kick out of here with the last time I play this, maybe this year. We'll see.
And Hunter. And here's Young. Backtrack. 5-2. Young. Let's go. And
just an arbiter of what's to come, y'all. Exactly. Until next time, y'all. Y'all take care. Peace. Thank you.